Hello, hello, and welcome to Grow Your English, an enriching podcast for higher level English users with me, Tree Blackmore. And an extra big welcome to all my new listeners. Please say hi on Instagram and tell me where you've been listening from. Before I forget, you can get a full, annotated, and accurate transcript of today's episode, complete with language and learning notes, and a listening activity by clicking the link in the show notes. Maybe you want to pause and do that right now. Your ears will thank you for it. And I will thank you if you subscribe to Grow Your English. And if you enjoy this episode, I will be eternally grateful if you take the time to send me some stars or even drop a short review. This episode of Grow Your English is the third in my mini-series all about the Cambridge English Language Exams. And today, I am exploring the C2 Proficiency Exam with my guest, Sarah Morgan. Sarah runs Meaningful English. She is an online English teacher who helps advanced and proficient English users participate in meaningful communication without being held back by anxiety or criticism. She's also a fabulous friend stroke colleague. Can I coin the term frolic? And I'm super excited to bring you this long-awaited conversation about the Cambridge C2 Proficiency Exam. So Sarah, perhaps you can start by telling us, what is the C2 Proficiency Exam?
It's a really good question to start with, because I think some people have confused what it is or what it means to have the qualification. So the C2 proficiency exam used to be known as CPE, but it isn't officially known by that name anymore, is the final exam of the Cambridge Main Suite exams, which starts at A2 key, goes through B1 preliminary, B2 first, C1 advanced. C2 proficiency is the last one. It proves, apparently, that a candidate has mastered English to an exceptional level and that they can communicate with the fluency and sophistication of a highly competent English user in academic or professional settings. I emphasize those two words because it's extremely important, and I'll be talking about that more throughout today's episode.
Sure.
But the qualification is aimed at learners who want to show they can do one of several things. The first is that they can study demanding subjects at the highest levels. So that means maybe postgraduate studies or PhD studies. So it proves that they have the necessary level of English to be able to do so. It means they can actively engage in academic life by not only listening to or watching tutorials and seminars, but actually confidently participating in them, that they can lead on complex and challenging research projects. So not just completing them, but leading on them. Or in terms of business, negotiating, persuading effectively at a senior management level. So it's quite similar to the C1 advanced exam, but it's just, it's another step up.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you say, it's the kind of the final Cambridge exam, which doesn't equal the end of learning by any means, but yeah, it's the top of the
range.
You've already mentioned that things that people can do once they've achieved this exam, but can you tell us a bit more about exactly who takes it and why?
Sure. People who want to move abroad, live in an English-speaking country, study at an English-speaking university, but for the highest levels of academia. Anyone who wants to go for a scholarship or a grant at a university or a higher education establishment, the C2 proficiency exam is usually required. And if it isn't required, it's a huge plus. Anyone who is preparing for competitive points-based, usually civil servant exams, and lastly, English teachers.
Yes.
English teachers who want to improve their job prospects, or just want to continue with their professional development, want to continue learning. Mm-hmm. And so it's incredibly advantageous to attend C2 proficiency classes and then take the exam themselves.
Yeah, you're right. It really does set you apart. And why did you decide then to specialize in the C2 proficiency exam preparation?
As you said at the beginning of the episode, I'm now an online teacher. I work for myself, but I used to be the director of studies at a language school here in Spain. And it was my responsibility to teach the C2 proficiency classes as the director of studies. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that responsibility. But year after year, I noticed a very clear pattern in the kind of students who decided to prepare for this qualification. They were very conscientious, highly successful in whatever they were doing, but had a very definite perfectionist streak in their personalities, and they were very hard on themselves. It's not true for everyone who I taught, but there was definitely this kind of pattern or tendency.
Which fits in with the kind of fields and the levels at which they're working or aspire to work. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoyed working with these kind of students because they had a very clear goal in mind. They were extremely hardworking. I think the level of the language is fascinating for me. The kind of things that we get into and discuss and talk about is really interesting. But I loved helping them reach that goal, but reach that goal while not killing themselves in the process. And so being able to say at the end of the day that they were really proud of themselves and they were able to celebrate the smaller wins along the way. I really enjoy that side of it because it's hard. It's hard. It's a very challenging qualification. It's a very tough exam. So being able to say that at the end of the day is an achievement in itself.
Yes. And without kind of dropping the other balls that you might be juggling whilst you're studying. Yeah.
Yeah, really exactly. Point. It's very rare that someone can stop doing all of the other things that they're doing and just focus on exam preparation.
Yeah.
So you have to learn how to juggle different things, prioritize, be kind to yourself in the process. Then when I went freelance and started kind of becoming more involved in the world of social media to advertise my classes, I was really astounded by the amount of inaccurate and unhelpful advice that is out there for students at this level. And I'm not saying that I am the fountain of all knowledge when it comes to C2 proficiency, but do understand the ins and outs of the exam.
Yeah.
And there's just so much rubbish out there about what you have to do, what's important, what isn't. And that doesn't help with students' confidence. So that was what kind of pushed me to think I can teach this very well and I can give accurate, reliable advice about what is actually important. So that's why I decided to specialize in this side of English teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. And also then work very closely with students. And I think you have a knack for explaining difficult concepts and being very clear.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. That comes across in your social media presence.
Thank you.
But yeah, there is a lot of rubbish out there on the internet. Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff as well. You know, having a teacher that really understands can then kind of guide people away from perhaps the things that don't serve them.
Yeah.
I would say. Yeah. All right. So what then, you've touched on it a little bit, but what's the difference between C1 advanced and C2 proficiency?
Okay. So in the previous episode, Yelena provided an excellent rundown or detailed explanation of what C1 advanced involves. I don't want to repeat what she's already said because there is a lot of overlap between the two exams. So for anyone listening who isn't familiar with the Cambridge exams and hasn't listened yet to Yelena's episode, I recommend they do that because she really goes into what some of the tasks involve.
Yes.
and those exam tasks are connected. There is a through line. So in terms of format, a lot of the exercises are very similar. The use of English section, the listening exam is the same as the C1 Advanced in terms of format, obviously not in terms of language and challenge, but what you're expected to do is the same. In the reading exam, there is actually one exercise fewer than in the C1 Advanced exam. There are 8 parts to the reading and use of English exam, not only reading. There are 7 in C2 proficiency. The main differences are in the writing and the speaking. The writing, there are still 2 parts to the writing. And the first part is still an essay, but the format of that essay is very different.
Yeah.
In all of the other Cambridge Main Suite exams, you're provided a question and things to include. In the C2 proficiency essay, it's actually a reading and writing task combined.
Yeah.
You're given 2 relatively short texts on the same theme or topic, but you then have to read those texts, be able to summarize them, evaluate the key points, and include your own ideas about those.
Yeah.
So it is more challenging. And that's usually one of the tasks that people need the most help with because they haven't done it before if they've prepared for the other Cambridge exams.
Yeah. Synthesizing and combining what's common in each text. Yeah. And adding opinion. Yeah. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Within a time period with a word limit.
Yes. In an exam situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is a challenge.
Yeah.
So that's the writing. And in the speaking, one exercise is different to the C1 Advanced. There is a new exercise, which people tend to call it the monologue. You're given a topic on a card and you have to talk about that topic for a set period of time. Again, it's different to the other things that you will have practiced if you've prepared for Cambridge exams before. So people tend to need to practice that a bit more than the other tasks. So those are the differences in terms of format. In terms of language, a lot of people think that C2 is just one step up from C1 Advanced. That might be true in terms of grammar. Generally, if you've taken the C1 Advanced exam, you will have touched most of the grammar that you're expected to know for C2 proficiency. But then C2 is all about going deeper.
Yeah.
Being able to use it more flexibly, in a more stylish way. So there isn't much more to learn in terms of the grammar, but you need to be able to use it with much more flexibility. Lexis or vocabulary.
Big one.
Is a whole other ballgame. So to use sort of a student's expression, it's completely different.
Yeah.
And my students mostly say that they get frustrated because the more they learn about vocabulary, the less confident they feel about what they know.
Yeah.
It's just like the scope of what the candidates are expected to know explodes at this level because English is a language that has such a vast, rich vocabulary.
Yes.
So it's just very important to hold on to the fact that you're never going to know everything, but you really need to work on vocabulary, lexis at C2 proficiency.
Yeah. And what's come into my mind now is an inverted triangle. So with A1 being at the bottom point, and as you go up the levels, you know, the towards the base of the inverted triangle, look at a diagram in the transcript. It's a visual to try and get people to understand that the scope is ever wider.
Yeah.
Especially with Lexis. Absolutely. I think when I was teaching a C1, C2 group in Spain, we spent a whole lesson on different ways to describe ways of walking, different words for how to walk.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do have a lot of different ways of expressing an idea very differently. Yeah. Super true. Okay. So, yeah, thinking about my inverted triangle going from A1 upwards, it's also connected to learning hours. So a question that we had on social media was how much time people should invest to get to C2. This particular person was asking from a C1 level. So if we think about the CEFR, which is the Common European Framework of Reference for Language Learning, it's a huge document. But the guided learning hours, so guided means either in a classroom or with very kind of structured program of homework or self-study, from C1 to C2, the CEFR recommends 200 to 250 hours. So if you think you're learning for 2 hours a week in a language school, that's basically, if you're doing 2 hours a week homework on top of that, that's a whole year of learning where you only take 2 weeks holiday. That's, you know, a language school model. It's a guided minimum, I would say. You can't rely on that figure. A more concerted effort is required, I think. Okay. And, you know, we both teach one-to-one. There are so many variables. You know, if you're learning in a class, how big's the class? If you're learning one-to-one, how much time do you have to devote to self-study? Mm-hmm. How often are your lessons? You know, what's the duration of the course? You know, personally, as a learner, how much time do you need for kind of language to stick and for you to feel comfortable and kind of secure using the language? One of the things that Sangeeta said in the episode about the B2 is, you know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, and it's not just about getting, well, for some people it is just about getting the piece of paper, but you want to be able to apply and to use and to develop all of this amazing language that you've put the effort into learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that takes a bit of time to have it there, I would say.
Yeah. And really, for C2 proficiency, you won't pass unless you do that. You have to actively put all of that into practice. It isn't enough to just recognize an expression a couple of times when you're reading something. Yeah. You really need to have an in-depth understanding of how that language works.
Yeah. And meet it in different ways and meet it over time, being secure in it and being having it embedded.
Yeah.
Would that be a good way of describing it?
Yeah, absolutely. Having it embedded. And I mean, key words that come up when you look at the C2 proficiency mark scheme and the rubric or the instructions that the examiners have, especially for speaking and writing, it's things like elegantly or with complete control.
Yeah. Or sophistication and ease.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it isn't just about knowing something and being able to use it in a couple of situations. It's about really being able to use it in a stylish way. So it takes a lot of practice.
Yeah. And to get up to speed in terms of being able to, in an exam setting, process and then produce the language. Like, I'm thinking of the speaking, you know, you're presented with the situation, the photos, the card, and you just have to speak.
Yeah.
And for many people, unless you've really practiced and got a very wide and deep knowledge of all the subjects, to kind of go off the bat like that can be really challenging. I'm not talking about speaking quickly, but being able to move quickly into a new spoken situation is really, really important and quite tricky.
Incredibly tricky. And they're very, very complex topics.
Yeah.
The number of times that students say, why on earth do I have to write or speak about this topic? And it's true.
Yeah.
You would even though somebody might be preparing to study for a PhD or study a postgraduate course, they're looking to do something very specific.
Yeah.
There's one particular writing exercise, which is about buses. It's in one of the, I can't remember which resource book or if it's an official exam, but it's about buses. And whenever we come onto it, students say, why on earth do I need to write about buses? It's what they've chosen for that exam. So it's also having the wherewithal, the quick thinking skills to be able to tackle obscure less discussed topics.
Yes, kind of flick through the filing system in your brain and go, oh yeah, buses. Right, let's move on. Actually, I have just been talking about trains with a student, so
there you go.
Anyway, all right. So yeah, the next question then, Sarah, is what common myths surround this exam?
Okay, there are lots. So I'm going to try and just talk about the most common ones.
Yeah.
The first one is that you will sail through this exam if you've spent time living in an English-speaking country. Mm-hmm. I have quite a few discovery calls with people who are living in the UK and say, I've been living here now for 8 years, so I'm going to go straight for C2 proficiency. And the first thing I ask is, okay, when was the last time you wrote an academic essay? Mm-hmm. Do you know how to write reports? What kind of things do you read? Do you read The Economist, The Financial Times,
yeah.
The Atlantic, things like that? Mm-hmm. Because this is an academic exam. So although it is wonderful that you are able to communicate naturally in an English-speaking country, it is not the same as taking an academic exam. Mm-hmm. And you have to really be comfortable dealing with academic texts, complex reading material, mm-hmm. and listening material. Another question, when was the last time you took an online course in English? Mm-hmm. Or do you regularly listen to lectures? Or things like that. Those are the kind of questions, because that's the language that students need for this exam. So yes, it isn't enough to just be in an English speaking environment. That's the first myth.
Yeah.
The second one is that it's all about learning shed loads of idioms or obscure language. This is when my annoyance with social media comes in.
Yes. Don't say this. Say this.
Or, dude, you know these C2 words, and they're just the most random obscure words with no context.
Yeah.
So you don't know how they need to be used.
Yeah.
Very clear in the mark scheme for writing and speaking that you need to be intelligible, that it's about communicating clearly with flair. That doesn't mean chucking in as many random high-level verbs that nobody would ever use as possible. Yep. That's not what it's about. It's about communicating clearly.
Yeah.
Yes, you will need to know idioms. Yes, you will need to know formal language or be able to use it in your writing, but in the correct way and in the correct situations.
Yeah. Context is everything.
Another one is that you will fail or get zero if you make a mistake.
No.
Well, people say when I give them writing feedback, they'll say, oh, but I've made a mistake, and so that means that I'm going to get zero for language. That's not the case. It is true that in the mark scheme, it says that errors shouldn't be made at this level. And yes, it is true that you shouldn't be making mistakes with basic errors, verb forms, irregular verbs, you know, things like that. No. You can't make mistakes with those in your writing or in your speaking. However, one saving grace, one very positive thing about the Cambridge exam is that you don't have to pass every single exam in order to pass the exam as a whole.
Yeah.
So if you do lose marks in your writing, mm-hmm. but you're very strong, or your skills are very strong in reading or in use of English or in listening or speaking, it will compensate for that. So you don't have to score highly in every single exam in order to pass the whole thing.
Yeah.
If you get a low mark in one of the sections, hopefully in another section, it will, your mark will compensate for that, and it will even out.
It's a good feature of the exams, actually, that the scores will even themselves out. Yeah, it's very true. Mm-hmm. Which kind of mirrors real life, doesn't it? You've mentioned a few resources, examples of reading material. What's the best way to prepare for the exam?
Great question.
How long have we got?
Sure. I think that the most important thing before you even start is make sure you've got a really clear goal. As I've already said, it's an incredibly challenging exam. If you think, I've got a quiet year, why don't I study for the C2 proficiency? You might not end up taking it. You need to have a very clear why about why you're taking it, because you will need to refer back to that regularly throughout your preparation when you get frustrated. So having a clear goal in mind, a clear objective, a reason for why you are going to sit this exam is key.
Why before when, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because there's no shortcut. There's no quick way to go about taking this exam. You need to create an English bubble, an academic English bubble. So you need to be consuming tons of content, tons of the right kind of content. So watching your favorite series at the end of the night is a great way to disconnect, do something enjoyable in English, but that isn't really going to help with your preparation for this exam. Course books are a great starting point, but they're not the be-all end-all. The difference is really made in post-practice, your analysis of the exercises that you complete in a course and the other things that you do, the other material that you read, the other things that you listen to, watch. That's where the big difference is.
Yeah.
And it's going to be made.
Yeah. We spoke about that in the previous episode about kind of analyzing what was good, what didn't work, looking back, working out why.
And I really liked her point about analyzing both your correct answers and your incorrect answers.
Exactly.
Often when we get something right, we tick it. Oh, great. But why? Make sure you understand why that answer is correct and maybe how quickly you arrived at that answer, or was it tricky to find that answer? If it was tricky, what made it tricky? So really analyzing each and every one of those exercises is gold.
Yeah, I sometimes ask students to give a little grading system, or I do like a wiggly line for, I knew it, but I wasn't very sure, you know, as you said, and how easy was it for you to find that answer? Yeah, good awareness.
And then in terms of resources, I've already mentioned a few when I was talking about reading material, but watching documentaries is great. Watching documentaries on a wide range of different topics. Listening to podcasts, again, which deal with nonfiction. And listening to podcasts to do with literature are often useful as well. The kind of language that's used in literature analysis is really useful.
Yeah.
And I've already said watching academic lectures. Often my C2 proficiency students sign up for online MOOCs, those free courses that are offered by Harvard and Cambridge, often modules of their courses. So signing up to one of those and working through it and really paying attention to the language that's used, that's really useful as well.
That's a great tip. Yeah. MOOCs. Put that in the show notes. Yeah.
Okay. And then the last thing about preparation is just being really systematic. This is nothing to do with the language. It's all about the lifestyle. So as I've already mentioned, most students have a lot of things on their plate, need to juggle things. So being systematic, learning how to manage your time well, taking care of yourself in process, sleeping well, eating properly, fueling your mind and body in the way that you need to is so important.
Yeah. You can't learn if you haven't done those things first, and on exam day as well. But throughout the whole of your learning life. Yeah. Great advice. Okay. We had a question about how candidates can use the types of materials that you've just mentioned, authentic materials, articles, podcasts, to improve exam skills. So I would say for this, exactly so, choose the right kind of resources, all the things that you've already mentioned, from a variety of sources. So you're not just relying on, you know, things that come out of the same countries or the same publishers, as widely as possible. And different genre as well. It is an academic exam. It is for professionals, but it does feature sometimes fiction as well. And as you said, analysing literature. And that's really good for developing nice, strong, deep lexis,
mm-hmm.
lexical base.
Mm-hmm.
I like to talk about noticing, but as you've already said, it goes much further than just noticing. You really need to go digging, go mm-hmm. mining texts for information, if it's a reading text or a listening text.
Mm-hmm.
Revisit them with different foci, with different things that you're looking for,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's grammatical, vocabulary, structural. Something I ask people to do sometimes is to take a text and then try and create an exam style mm-hmm. task. Mm-hmm. So kind of turning the tables, whether it's keyword transformations, that old mm-hmm. favorite, or word class activities, choosing the words that you might expect a question setter to do, and then mm-hmm. giving those to your teacher, to your study buddy, to mm-hmm. whoever, because that gets you thinking differently about how to approach a text, and also what to, in terms of anticipation, what might come, as well as giving you a deeper relationship with the language.
Mm-hmm. Those are great tips. Mm. I think paraphrasing as well, taking a section of something that you've read or listened to and thinking, I mean, the exam is mostly formal, but there's a grade of formality from kind of neutral up to extremely formal. So you could, if you've just read something that's extremely formal, you could try to rewrite it so that it's more neutral.
Yes.
That's really useful. And that's useful for all of the different parts of the exam, because in the listening and the reading, you really have to understand nuance and the slight differences in meaning depending on those kind of things. So by actually doing it yourself, it will really help when it comes to answering those kind of questions.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. We often talk about paraphrasing in terms of purely vocabulary and grammar. But looking at tone and style and formality. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah. And when you read something or listen to something, think about the author's purpose. Why did they write this? How were they feeling? Mm-hmm. What's the deeper message that they're trying to get across here, rather than just reading on the surface and taking the surface level information?
Which is, a transferable skill to academic study and beyond. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
great. All right. So we're teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people need teachers to prepare for this exam rather than just complete lots and lots of self-study?
Mm-hmm. My answer initially might be a little bit controversial, because when people first approach me and say, I need a teacher to help me with all parts of the exam, they actually say, I don't think you do, because learners, candidates at this level need to be independent and they need to have a level of autonomy. So they shouldn't be depending on a teacher for everything. They should, as I've already said, have this English bubble in which they are getting lots and lots of input.
Mm-hmm.
And then the point of working with a teacher is to really work on the points that you are struggling with.
Yeah.
The points that make you feel very insecure. When you're doing a reading or a listening task, the points that you just can't grasp or get a hold on, that's when you should enlist a teacher. For speaking and writing, I think working with a teacher is invaluable, because you will know whether you are on the right path or not. And that's incredibly important. Yelena already said in the previous episode about how important it is to answer the question.
Yeah.
And it's astounding the amount of times you've worked with people, even teachers, and they don't realize that they aren't answering the question. I think for writing and speaking, it's incredibly helpful.
Yes, exactly. If you are signed up to my newsletter, you would have heard a bonus clip from Sangeeta saying something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But it's a common occurrence, isn't it, that people get carried away trying to get all of their beautiful language in and then miss essential points because they haven't answered the question correctly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Particularly with that synthesizing task that you were talking about earlier.
And then possibly more importantly, confidence.
yeah
as I've already said, most of the people I tend to work with are incredibly hard on themselves. So having a little cheerleader.
We talked about cheerleaders.
So to help you celebrate the things that you're doing well and actually recognize them instead of just discounting them and focusing on the things that you aren't doing right yet or things like that, it really, really helps.
And people working and studying at this level and mixing with people speaking advanced and proficient English tend to, well, we all know about comparisonitis, comparing ourselves unfavorably to other people when, focusing on the wrong things, like you said. Absolutely. All right. So we have had an incredibly fruitful and detailed discussion so far. Thank you so much. I do have a question that I ask all of my lovely guests, which is, what piece of advice do you have for people to grow, in this case, their exam English?
So besides listening to these three episodes, all of the Cambridge exam English, I'm going to cheat a little and give you two answers, one specifically for C2 and another one just for general exam preparation.
Sure. That's allowed.
So for C2 proficiency, make sure that the resources you are using are academic and you are focusing on academic language. It isn't the only kind of language that's included, but it's the thing that surprises people the most or the thing that they're missing in their preparation. So it is an academic exam. You need to be working with academic input, academic resources. That's incredibly important. And then for general exam preparation, practice analysis, complete an exercise, analyze what went well and what you need to do better next time. There really isn't anything more useful than that.
And it's building a really good routine of doing that as well. Great. Thank you so much, Sarah. I really believe that you have put our C2 hopefuls' minds at rest during this episode. It is a challenging exam, but it's hopefully doesn't feel quite so difficult now if you're heeding Sarah's advice. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, I'm not quite ready for C2, there are, as we've already mentioned, two more episodes in this mini-series. One is the B2 First with Sangeeta, and the other is the C1 Advanced with Yelena. If you'd like to receive my newsletter and get the bonus clips, just let me know. Contact me. I'd love to hear from you. Wherever you are in the world, don't be shy. I'll put Sarah's information in the show notes for Instagram in particular. Sarah is at meaningful.english and I am at ELTree online. It just remains for me to say thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing your wonderful wisdom and insights. It's been really fantastic to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I tried to keep it as succinct as possible, but I really that's gone on too long, as usual.
No, it's a big exam which required big thinking and detail. So yeah, really appreciate it. And the only bits I'll be editing out are the little flaps that I made. All right. So thank you to everybody for listening. Thanks again to Sarah and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What an informative conversation. It was such a pleasure to talk to Sarah. And like me, Sarah teaches English one-to-one online. She also has an excellent group course called Meaningfully Fluent for curious minds who want to slow down, reflect, and gain new perspectives on language. Find out more at meaningful.english on Instagram. Don't forget that you can get your listening resources for this episode via the link in the show notes. And if you do sign up to Treemail, which is my newsletter that comes your way once a month or so, then you will also get a bonus tip from Sarah. Join me next time when my guest Steve Sharp and I will be discussing the one and only IELTS test, not to be missed. Thank you so much for growing your English with me, and for now, goodbye.
Grow Your English podcast, come and find me on Instagram @eltreeonline.